Hello, everyone, and welcome to Press Pause, a series on our show where we sit down with creatives in the TTRPG space and talk about what they do and why they do it. So today, I have a couple wonderful people here who are part of Publishing Goblin and the team for Confluence, the Living Archive, a new TTRPG.
I'm Candy Williams. I am the lore QA lead for Confluence RPG. I also do a bunch of writing on it, marketing, wherever my skills are needed.
Hi, I'm Sin. I am one of the mechanics writers for the project, and I'm also helping out on like some social media.
Oh, don't forget art, Sin. Don't forget art. You do some art too.
A little bit, yeah.
This is unfortunately audio only, but the art is spectacular in this game.
Oh, that's Chad. That's not me. But yeah, just a teeny tiny bit of art in there.
Before we jump into talking about the game, I'd like to get a little bit of your background in TTRPGs, kind of how you got into them. Candy, if you wouldn't mind starting us off.
Sure, yeah. So I started playing TTRPGs about 20 years ago in college. The guy across the hall was really into them. We became good friends, and we got a little group together and just started playing. Like, he didn't even have the books. It was D&D, basically, but he didn't even have the books. He was just kind of going off of everything from memory, but I remember at the time. And yeah, we just started playing then. I got back into it about, oh goodness, maybe 8 years ago. And started to run in like some family games, and then we started a streaming group called Dicey Amazons, and started streaming a little bit. And then from there, I started writing TTRPGs and, you know, getting some freelance gigs here and there, and then started with Publishing Goblin soon after.
Very similarly to a lot of people, it was also D&D. I was in college as well, and this was, around 2017. My ex's friend invited us to try out D&D, and I had heard about it. But I had the only association I had with it was that it was a very American thing. Like, for context, I'm from the Philippines, for those at home who don't know. So it was a very foreign thing to me. It was like that, you know, a game that like I usually associate with like, you know, people that don't play here in the country. And so I tried it, and I was so excited. It had so much fun. And before that, I was really into board games. And that felt like kind of like a different kind of board game. It was my first kind of experience with it, and I really fell in love with it. And then, so it was lots of D&D. We played like in this huge campaign run by my first like DM. And there were like 20 players on this table, and it was exciting. And we were meeting NPCs from like the campaign prior to us. So some players on the table would recognize their own like characters from the old campaign. It was really exciting. It was kind of like being introduced into a whole community, and it was really kind of like a new thing for me. And I stuck with it, and then eventually I started finding out about other tabletop role-playing games, because I started seeing events pop up, because I started going to Adventurers League, D&D like Adventurers League, and alongside Adventurers League, there would be these other tabletop RPG events, or like other games, just kind of like played on like one or two tables versus like, you know, the 10 D&D tables. And I'd be like, what's that? And I'd be like, I got super curious, and I played like a Powered by the Apocalypse game for the first time. And I was just like, oh, this is different. And also like way more my jam, actually.
Yeah, I have a similar college, D&D, that's how it started for me.
Yeah, right?
Everyone.
Yeah. And then I made really good friends with the organizers of Gamers and Gaming Meets, and their specialty is also hosting these gaming events, but they specifically would, like, make an effort to play things that are not D&D. Like, they would touch upon, like, you know, like, they would have, like, maybe one or two D&D tables, but they would really make an effort to have game masters who would run these different systems in different games. So, like, that was my first taste of things like Werewolf, things like Hunter, things like Pathfinder, things like all of those other, and, like, again, like Power of the Apocalypse and etc. And I was just like, this is really fun, this is really exciting.
Was there one during that time that kind of jumped out at you?
The first time I played Blades in the Dark was just a life-changing experience. I would say I was just kind of like, oh, this is a different kind of exciting. I love, like, the push your luck vibe of, like, you know, the stress mechanics and whatnot. I love being scoundrels and heisting. It was so exciting. And then I also fell in love with Pendragon a lot. Yeah, I don't know. It was just, like, really fun. And then I joined that organization. They kind of scouted me. And that's kind of when I also started writing my own little games. And then eventually we held an event here in Manila called Session Zero, where we just kind of, like, told people, hey, design your games, and we'll hold kind of like an art market, but for tabletop RPGs, like, make your little prints. So we all
cool.
Print, like, little zines, and it was, like, the first one that ever happened here in my city. And yeah, that was really fun. We went, like, global with it too, because we went online during at the very, like, start of the pandemic. But anyway, yeah, that's where I started.
Cool. Candy, do you have any games outside of D&D that are kind of your favorites to play?
Yeah, I do like Powered by the Apocalypse, mainly because it's easy to get different types of
exactly.
games into it. Yeah.
The playbooks are so fun to
yeah play. Exactly, to just read, make, whatever. It's all, like, really cool. I do also like Kids on Bikes type stuff. And then as far as, like, a little bit crunchier, I guess, is Numenera, so the Cypher system. Ooh. Like, those types of games
I've not played, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, I know some of the inspirations for Confluence came from, like, the Cypher system and the way that it plays. So
it is crunch. That is true. That is quite a crunchy game.
All right. Well, you guys both kind of talked a little bit about how just kind of playing these games got you into the designing and writing side of it. How did you come to be a part of Publishing Goblin?
Candy was in there first, for sure.
Yeah, I was in there first. So so I was doing, I was streaming with the Dicey Amazons, and we joined, like, a Discord, and they were running a game jam. It was for, oh God, I forget the actual name, but it's like the BIPOC Vampire Jam is what it was.
Oh, I remember this.
So they were running that. Yeah, they were running this game jam. And I just, like, I had never, like, I had done some kind of stuff before for, like, work, like, you know, like, learning stuff and whatnot, but nothing, you know, and I'd always, you know, when I ran games, always kind of came up with my own world and things like that. But the last day of the jam, I was very bored that day. and I'm just like, oh, I'm so bored. I just need something to do. Like, I don't know. I've been seeing this game jam thing going on. I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to join it. On the last day, I'm going to make a game and submit it. And I did. I already had this world that I've been sort of building for years in my head and continue to build. Hopefully it'll end up being several things. But so I was like, okay, I have a world. What can I do with that? to make it a game. And so I did a fairly simple system of the game and submitted it, did all of that on the last day. And a lot of people liked it. We did like a stream of the game. Like part of the jam was that, you know, we was, you know, could stream the games, during like the BIPOC, Vamp Jam weekend. So we did, had a lot of fun, and I'm like, ah, this is fun. I liked designing this game. And so, one of the people in the Dicey Amazons Discord contacted me, and that's the project manager for Confluence. And wow. They were like, yeah, Leia. She was like, hey, like, you know, I've, you know, been a fan for a while of the Dicey Amazons, you know, I saw your game, things like that. We're, you know, we just started working on this game, and just give me like all these details and everything. It was like, hey, would you, you know, would you be interested? And I was like, yeah. So I interviewed for it and got it. But it was probably nice. Like a couple of weeks after writing my first game. So it's been about, October 1st? Yeah, yeah. It's been 3 years. It's all right. Right around 3 years.
Yeah. There's a very quick trajectory there.
Yeah, exactly.
So before publishing Goblin and Confluence, I've been doing a lot of writing and commissions for tabletop RPGs and my own publishing. Like I publish a lot of my games on Itch, as I guess like most tabletop RPG people do, and I met a lot of people that way, through like, you know, just like kind of common interests. And I think when I blew into the scene right around 2020 or so, 2019, there was a lot of like interest in like lyrical games and whatnot, and that was kind of like really where a lot of the people that I knew really hung out, that kind of thing. And I met Viditya Valetti, who was the one who actually recommended me into joining, or like being hired, I guess, for Confluence. And that's so cool. I found that like really flattering, because I didn't know that there was like an opening, and I don't think in particular that there was a posting or anything like that. But like, you know, the hustle is the hustle. And so like on Twitter, like I basically just always, almost every day, just yell about like, hey, my commissions are open.
You gotta like, do it.
Yeah, I do everything from like writing to layout to art to like, heck, I've designed a card box too before for a client. Like any money is good. And so especially because this sort of work became my full-time when the pandemic hit, because I lost my job at the beginning of the pandemic. And so I was just like, oh, this is it. This is the only thing that can sustain me at the moment, because the job market was really bad here and continues to be, honestly. I've tried multiple times to kind of get back into quote-unquote streamlined work here and not be a freelancer, but it's just been really difficult over the past couple of years. So this is like the thing that's been giving me really consistent work. And Vidi was the one who I guess like must have told internals and recommended me, and I guess I did good at the interview.
Yeah, here you are.
You did.
Yeah. I know for sure that Vidi recommended me for mechanics, because for the longest time within like the tabletop RPG creation like scene or whatever, I really kind of pushed my mechanics writing harder than my world building and narrative, I guess. I don't have a lot of faith in my narrative writing, mostly because I have not tested the waters that hard about my narrative writing. But it's just that kind of thing of, like, I feel way more confident in my understanding of mechanics and how to develop them versus in the figuring out the narrative of a world and whatnot. And VD and I used to really kind of vibe with that. Well, we still do. But, like, we really vibe on that level of, like, we really love taking apart mechanics and kind of turning them into spare parts and putting it together and making it work.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you need the narrative in the TTRPGs, but you also do need mechanics. They're both very important parts of making a game.
There was a time, gosh, where me and some friends, some designers over here got really deep into the nitty-gritty of, like, so let's talk, like, statistical probabilities of the different types of, like, dice, like, sides. Like, what's the swing of a D6 versus a D12, and etc. It was really fun. that kind of stuff I really enjoy, actually.
This episode of Queer PG is brought to you by Publishing Goblin and their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive. Confluence is a genre-bending game of fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, built to tell character-driven stories. Explore the beautiful and original setting of Ageria, where phenomena called confluxes bring people together, space and time be damned. Use magic alongside technology to cook your favorite meals, rebel against corrupt power systems, explore sites long forgotten, and create colorful characters and companions for your next journey. Confluence is an original D6 dice pool engine with fully customizable character creation that drives and changes with the narrative you tell. The story leader guides the players with the help of the Atlases, a setting guide full of in-universe documents and stories to uncover, to fully immerse the table in the mystical, whimsical, and colorful world of Ageria. With a team of almost 100% queer folks, a Confluence RPG and a Queer PG partnership seemed inevitable, and we are very excited about watching this game come to life. Confluence RPG is on BackerKit now. Check out the link in the description to see how you can support Publishing Goblin and their new game, Confluence: The Living Archive.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl. In a special Gertrude room. Happy birthday, happy birthday! I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two, that's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones
and get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck.
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead. As a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal. Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
That brings us to the game. Confluence, the Living Archive. I have had the pleasure of going through a bunch of the game materials, and as I said at the beginning, the art is incredible. Mwah. I personally am, I love world building, and I love a good book of places, so the Atlas is my favorite thing. It feels like it was made just for me. But there's a lot of different aspects of this game, and I kind of want to know what were, well, you know, actually, first of all, I feel like maybe describing in your words what this game is would be the way to start off.
Do you want to go for it, Candy?
Sure. I think I've heard Aaliyah say it best, is like this game or this world, it's a world of meeting, right? Because you have people, places, and things coming from the past and the future to this one point in time. And so you're getting experience with a lot of different cultures and just technologies, magics, things that you would not get to see necessarily in your era. And so, like, it's just this really good, like, melting pot of peoples that come from very different backgrounds, just trying to find a way to move forward. And so it's a really great, like, slice of life game where you could just get in and you could just have like this really cool cooking competition where somebody brings something that you've never seen before because it's not, you know, it's not something that you necessarily grew up with. You can just see a bunch of these like just really cool like flora and fauna in the game, things that you've never seen or grew up with again. And so just really getting to get to know this world is just the biggest part for me, because there's so much in it. Like, this is just the smallest slice of this world.
What I was given was like a coast, and I was like, okay,
this
already is massive, and I know there's more.
There's a whole lot more. And so, and it's so great because, like, this one is just sort of, like, the colorful, like, it looks like there's not a lot of, like, conflict going on. There is, you know, like, you've got some stuff brewing here and there, political, like, stuff and heisting and all that stuff. You still have that. But, like, there's so much more to it. Like, just don't be surprised in the future if what you're looking at from Confluence isn't as colorful. That's what I'm going to say.
That being said, because it's kind of this game that allows you to pull from a ton of different places, everybody, every player, every storyteller, story leader has the opportunity to kind of bring their own inspirations to it. But what were kind of the original inspirations that brought this game to be?
I know that Seven, the entirety of Confluence is based on a lot of like existing works by Seven. So the way that it's created as narrative and lore heavy actually does have like its anchors on that. So Confluence kind of exists in like this middle space of being touched by all of those works, but at the same time existing independently of those works, right? Am I getting it right, Candy?
Yes, yeah, you're correct. Seven's the project owner. They have a bunch of other like games and tarot and other things, poetry books that they've put out. And some of those are technically in the same universe, but you don't need to know any of that to play Confluence. But it would give you a little extra, you know, lore to the game if that's, you know, something you like. So, yeah. But they started making this game when they were like a teenager. So it's been a long time coming from them. Yeah. And we're just kind of brought in to bring, you know, a little extra life to the world, you know, refine it, bring some, you know, some different stories to it.
As for like specific inspirations, it's hard to really kind of point out specific ones considering everybody, the settings writing team is quite a chunky team, and they have all brought a huge amount of themselves and their own influences into the writing. One of the most prominent, I suppose, is like, you know, all the pirates and swashbuckling and all that, because it is the coast. And there's some really fascinating lore bits in there about like Delrin, the pirate town that is like outwardly looks like mega hostile and really like dangerous and exciting and high octane, but like if you look into the history of it, like it's a refuge for those who were discarded or essentially by the trade network. So there's like that kind of like camaraderie and found family within the people of Delrin too. So it's that kind of like, you know, vibe, and that is pretty similar to a lot of like other stories that we see also in popular media, right? So like the way that a lot of lore for Confluence is written is it really does feel like a massive jigsaw puzzle where everybody has brought like different pieces of it to make it like all come together. As like one of the members of the mechanics team, it's been really fascinating watching the settings team kind of like, you know, put their stuff together. Because like, you know, you just kind of see the document getting bigger and bigger. We visit the document every so often. It's like, ooh, there's new stuff written. it's really fun.
I think that's fairly clear, actually, in as somebody who's like had their eyes on it, reading it from an outside perspective, it has felt like there is like a ton of interpersonal, personal, cultural inspirations that have come together as important parts of how you exist within the world of Ajuria, as in like culture is really important in like respecting what new things are brought in, pulled in from outside. So I think that's fairly clear in awesome. How it's set up. Yeah. I got that when I read it. Well, you mentioned that the kind of beginning of this was when the owner, Seven, was a teenager. But how long has it been, like, actually in project development?
So this is technically not the first release of the game. Technically, it was released twice, Seven tried to crowdfund it. It didn't really work those two times. The first time was in 2017. The second time was in 2020.
Yeah, I recently looked at those pages just out of curiosity. I was like, just trying to peek into the history of it. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and so just after that, Seven had a ridiculous crowdfunding campaign for the Alleyman's Tarot. It made like 1.2 or 1.4 million. And so they were like, okay, I have a little bit of cash. I can actually bring on a team to be able to help bring this to life. And so that's what started us 3 years ago was that. And so for the last 3 years, we've had this team that we've built from, I think the original was like 5-ish people. And then it grew to the 15, that we had, well, 14, 15 that we have over the last 3 years. And so, yeah, we've just been, going through a bunch of the old material. That's kind of how we started out, and kind of pulling things that we wanted in from that material. And then, just like I said, refining it, adding to it, things like that. Yeah.
Have you had a specific part of the project, Candy, that your focus is on?
That my focus is on?
Yeah. Or are you overseeing?
As the sort of lore QA lead, it's kind of everything for me.
It's kind of everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of everything for me.
All right, then. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Then do you have a favorite part of the lore?
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, so I came up with the Akari Archive. And so it's the sort of main organization that writes the Atlas in the game. And so just being able to sort of see this group spread out over the game geographically as well as lore wise is great, because y'all haven't seen like the city of Akari.
No.
you're not gonna see it for a while, right? Yeah, based on like what we're doing, like the sort of timeline of what we're doing, you're probably not gonna see like the city of Akari for a while. But what it does is it helps you get a better sort of understanding of the wider world than what we've released, right? Because you get to see like these organizations that have their reach in different places. You get to see how people either like or dislike them, things like that in the game. And so because it sort of has that wide reach, I think it's sort of my favorite piece of lore. And then just being able to, like, we've been able to add a bunch of like NPCs that work as archivists for them. And so I think we've had a lot of fun coming up with these NPCs and giving them different personalities and the reasons why they're writing in the region that they're writing in and things like that.
Sin, on your side, on the mechanics side here, there's it's a D6 game, there's a dice pool element, there's a lot of facets.
Don't get me started on the catalog. Oh my god. All right.
Like, how was it chosen that this was how the mechanics were gonna be laid out or work best, per se?
Oh, well, let's preface this by saying that I'm actually the newest member of the team. I was one of the newer members of the team. I think we were kind of like hired as a batch, right, Candy? I don't particularly remember who exactly.
Yeah, we hired like six people on that last batch. Yeah. It was 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, but among the mechanics team in particular, I'm basically the newest member. So by the time I came in, there were already a lot of things like set in place. The dice pool system, the rolling. A few things here and there have changed since I joined, but there are a few things that have like not left us, such as the facets, for example. one of the major like changes, I would say, that like can really like encompass a lot of the mechanics of Confluence is how this was by the time I was in already. We were kind of reviewing how our mechanics felt because we were doing a lot of internal playtests. And we would always be left with this strange feeling of like, there's something missing. Like our mechanics work well and they are enjoyable, but there's something missing. And we eventually kind of came to the conclusion that we needed to create mechanics that would highlight the setting and highlight the lore much better than what they currently were doing. Because at that time, we had expressed that a lot of our mechanics, while they play well, they don't feel particularly like they are made for the setting, you know what I mean? Like, you could put it into any other fantasy setting, and those mechanics would still work. So, well, we started to kind of, like, really take apart what we currently had and try to figure out how best to make it feel like these mechanics cannot be divorced, essentially, from the setting. That was, like, a huge, like, decision that we eventually made in the mechanics team. And I think it has most definitely colored all of our decisions moving forward. Like, it had, like, every mechanics decision that we had after that was, like, well, does it make sense in this world to have that sort of thing? Does it play well with all of our other mechanics? And is this another plug-and-play situation, or is this something that we can develop further to really make it feel like we're not claiming that any of our mechanics are unique by any shape of the matter, right? Because, like, there's nothing new about a D6 system. There's nothing new about a dice pool system. There's nothing new about facets that are basically kind of like playbooks. And there's nothing new about callings that are also kind of like playbooks. They're, like, all of our mechanics are technically very much already done. And, like, we're not claiming any originality by any sort. And that's not really the point. What we tried to strive for instead is to make sure that the way that we wrote our mechanics would reflect the lore of the world entirely. So, like, one of the best ways to really look at that is our facets and our focuses. So facets in the game are kind of like, they're not quite playbooks, but they're sort of like playbooks in that if you choose a facet, that kind of becomes what your character is. So facet, as to take the word literally, is kind of like, they are facets of your character. They are facets of your personality, etc. So, an engineer would be a facet of your character. Like, they are an engineer, they enjoy engineering, they're a hacker, or they like to, you know, craft stuff, and etc. We have facets that are like physicality, which is like, you're just really physically capable, or you're able to use your body to your advantage in multiple settings. Like, you're really strong, or you can endure, or etc. Right? So, like, we made sure that the mechanics within those facets are colored by the setting. So, physicality in what sense? Like, what kind of confluence are we talking about? So, we have things there that are like, you know, physicality in the sense of tensormancy, for example, where tensormancy is an anomalous ability in Confluence that pertains to, like gravity magic. That's kind of like the whole vibe of tensormancy. And we have a physicality sort of thing where, oh, you're really good at adapting to low gravity situations. That kind of vibe.
I guess then how important was it at creating this and making the mechanics exist with the lore of the world to still allow for players of this game to create their own like specialties or facets for their characters.
Oh, well, we actually do have a zine that we're putting out alongside everything else called So You Wanna Build It, which is basically instructions for how to build it.
Great.
It's essentially instructions for, so you, if you would like to build a facet, here is how to do it. If you would like to build your own focuses, here is how to do it. And it's not just for story leaders. It's not just for GMs. It's also for players who are kind of like, you know, all of these facets are really cool, but I feel like there's this one thing that has been happening in our campaign that I feel like is a facet but doesn't quite fit. So I would like to retrofit like maybe three facets and turn them into one. Like, here's how to do that. Like, that's kind of the goal, at least, of that zine, to teach people how to make your own stuff. And we do have a lot of mechanics that like do allow you to make your own stuff. I think that really comes through the focuses. Focuses are literally like, this is what you are focusing on right now. Like, to explain it very plainly. And there are character, like for example, NPCs, right, in any game. Your character now would like to focus on this NPC because they are important to you. And so, like, they're, say, your best friend from youth. So you make that focus, you name it, you put in details about it, and, like, you say, oh, if whenever I perform a task and I'm getting help from this best friend, I get an extra dice in my pool because it makes me extra confident, or because we just work really well as a team together. So it's that kind of thing. Like, it affects you both mechanically and, like, story-wise, it also affects you. And characters, or rather players, are basically given the liberty to create as many focuses as they'd like on the table. You can have an entire plethora. If you can handle that much note-taking, why not? You can also sunset your focuses. You can kind of be like, we're moving to a new place. Let's like put this on the shelf.
I like how communal it all feels between the players and the story leaders.
Yeah, that was really a big thing that we also really wanted to emphasize. We wanted to make sure that the burden of creation and the burden of storytelling wasn't only on game masters and story leaders, because we wanted to also give space for players to think on their feet and to also help with, like, give them some kind of like agency to create things in the world. And the way that like a lot of the areas are also written, like lore wise, gives it also like a lot of place, I would think, to for like players to kind of be like, actually, I think my character comes from Project C1019 because they're a big scholar nerd that loves to study about colors. You know, like, that's just the thing. So it's easy enough for you to plant yourself in there.
Do you have, you know, as being creators of this game, have something in the game that you really hope is part of the experience that future players get while playing?
It's a good question.
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I hope that players sort of interact with, for me, is the focus card database. Because it allows you, so we're gonna have a database. For now, it's housed in our Discord, but we're working to get it online. But basically, you can upload your focus cards to the database, and other people can take those focuses into their own games. And so now this is one part, I call it the living archive. We're calling it the living archive because now you, like, as other players go through and change focuses and add focuses to their game, it could actually change your world too. And that's like my favorite part.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And so it does double work. Like I said, it allows other like groups to kind of change your world. But to me, it's also something that'll make it easy for players and story leaders to just go grab something really quick, right? Like if a story leader is like low on time and like, okay, I need to get some stuff going for this game. Okay, let me grab some of these focuses real quick. And we'll add these to our game. So same for the players, like as they're playing, they're like, okay, we need this place in the city. Let's see if somebody else has done, you know, a place in the city that works for our game. Okay, this works great. Let me grab it and pull it into our game.
Yeah, especially if they're kind of like, oh, I just want to give it a try. And they don't really know what the campaign is going to be or what even the game itself is going to be. And like the hope is that by the end of the session, they're like, oh, this is my buddy now. Like, you know, yeah, I'm not letting it go. Focus card database definitely is a big thing. We have a lot of like little bits and pieces of mechanics in the Atlas. We have things like specialties in there that can only be learned in certain places, and we have like facets that are only accessible in certain from certain areas, and like yeah, there's like lots of little bits, and I would hope that the way that they engage with things like the callings and the facets, I hope that it kind of really enriches their game, you know? I want them to look at our facets and play it like they are in Confluence. Like, I don't want them to just kind of, like, play, oh, I'm just a swashbuckling dueler that you can plop into any setting. You know what I mean? I want them to be like, oh, I'm a jelly-blooded goblin duelist from the Motley Coast, and the sun makes the spores on my skin itch because my symbiote is allergic to the sun. I want that kind of vibe, you know. Every time I see people create like their characters in like playtests, I'm always really fascinated by the characters that they create, because like I as a designer I'm very character forward. Like I spend a lot of time thinking about how people create their characters, and that shows in a lot of my design work too. And I love creating characters too. I feel like that's my favorite part of playing tabletop RPGs. It's just amazing characters. And like, honestly, any video game, right? Like, gives me a chance to choose from like 20 hairstyles, you best believe I'm gonna spend 30 minutes staring at every hairstyle. Like, I just love it. I love character customization. I love being able to have as much agency about my characters as, and like I am that person who is like, I will reveal only this much of my character's backstory to you because I don't want you to see the novel that I've written in the back.
Mm-hmm. My like 10-page document I sent to my DMs. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. That's me. I used to have a notebook for each character that I would have in like AL. You know what I mean? Like for AL. So unnecessary. But like AL is literally plug and play. Oh, your character died that module. Doesn't matter. You can like just remake them. No, I was like, no. My character needs to survive all the way to fucking level 20 because I'm too attached now.
Like, and I have this notebook with space I have to fill.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time here, but I want to ask both of you one last question. I kind of like to end on hearing a fond story of a table you've been at or a character moment you've had. And since we're talking about Confluence, if that moment is from one of the playtests you've done, that would be great. But it doesn't have to be.
So one of the last internal playtests that I did, so like the rules are pretty much how they are now for it. But the group that I was in decided to do sort of an Oops All Evil campaign. Which ended up being not necessarily evil, but just like bad. We were bad, but really goofy about it.
Like Saturday morning cartoon.
A bunch of goons. Exactly. We're definitely a bunch of goons. And so my favorite part of that, okay, so basically ended up, there ended up being a plan for us to, to disturb a gathering in the Motley Coast. Trade Network was having this big shindig, and they had brought in a famous poet. And so we were going to disturb the shindig, and the way we decided to do it, like we snuck into the poet's room, we put something in their lotion to make them like itchy and hivey and stuff like that. And then it gets to like the actual shit. So we were just kind of like setting all this stuff up, and then it gets to the actual shindig. It ended up being like a slam poetry like between the poet and then one of our group, who was also sort of like a little poet on the boat that we owned, the little restaurant or the bar boat that we owned. And so they ended up doing like this sort of slam poetry contest to get each other as all of these things are going on. So like guards are trying to grab us, people are throwing food. It was just really goofy.
Just the chaos.
Exactly. It was complete chaos, and it was so much fun. And it just so easily fit into the game. Right. And so I think that's my, like, one of my favorite like play moments of Confluence is just being super goofy, and it all just fits so well.
There was this one internal playtest where it was literally just us mechanics team members, because we were trying to figure out this one area in the Motley Coast, which is Rigondi. And we were like, maybe if we play a game set in Rigondi, we'll figure out what we need to write about in Rigondi, right? Like, because we were writing like different mechanics for different places. And so like we played this game, and the idea was that our village or our town was kind of like this swampy town. And we're just a bunch of kids playing around and being goofy, and I was a salient kid, and my salient is basically that what is the name of that Pokemon? My entire idea for how my salient kid look like is a Wooper from Pokemon.
Okay, I gotta look it up too. I don't know Pokemon very well.
Yeah, no. I was like, I'm just a Wooper. And it was so funny. And the whole idea was that we were a bunch of kids who just wanted to explore the swamp, but like recently it got closed off by a bunch of stinky scientists because of the kudzu overgrowth, right? And so we wanted to sneak in and see what was up. And then, like, we ended up, like, finding a giant catfish. And it's just so funny because it's just a catfish. Like, there's nothing.
It was a giant one. That's super important.
Like, there's nothing, like, bizarre about it. It's not even, like, a jelly-bloodied catfish or nothing like that. Like, it's not anomalous or anything like that. But it was just a giant catfish. And, of course, the kids, that's huge, right? And I feel like after that game, I was just so attached to that catfish that like any chance I get to reference it in like my little writings in. So we have a Patreon right now. Right. And one of the things I'm writing for the Patreon is our conspiracy theorist, Min, who just writes conspiracy theories about the entirety of Confluence. And any chance I get to insert anything about the funny catfish, giant catfish in Rigonby, I take it. Because I'm so attached to that funny catfish. Anyway, yeah, that's it. I don't know. It's so silly, but I love it.
I love those types of stories.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both again for joining me today to talk about this game. It's lovely to have you on here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Of course. And for our audience, by the time this episode airs, Confluence will be up on BackerKit. So the link will be in description, and you should go and support and back it and find out more about this awesome, wonderful world. Oh, also, by the time this comes out, we'll have a full episode on QueerPG of me going through the game and talking more about the character building and the world itself, so you can go check that out as well.
Exciting.
But yeah, I'm super excited for it. Thank you again, and for everyone listening. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.